Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
Birthright citizenship is guaranteed in the 14th Amendment. But as you've been hearing on WBEZ, the Trump administration is challenging that legal precedent. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. On day one, President Trump signed an order barring automatic citizenship for the children of parents in the country without legal status. 22 states sued, saying it was unconstitutional. Judges agreed and filed a national injunction stopping the president's wish from going into effect. Now, after oral arguments Thursday, the Supreme Court's now deliberating whether judges can take that step. To explain the legal arguments and questions this raises, we checked in with Stephen Schwinn, professor of law, University of Illinois, Chicago. And to give a window into how this could affect asylum seekers and people with temporary protected status, we talked with Ana Gil Garcia, founder of Illinois-Venezuelan Alliance. Also with us was Dulce Ortiz, board president of the Illinois Coalition of Immigrant and Refugee Rights and executive director of Mano a Mano Resource Center in Waukegan. We started with the panel's reaction to birthright citizenship being up for debate. The professor kicked us off.
Well, Sasha, it's actually kind of startling that birthright citizenship is even up for debate, given the long history in this country of recognizing birthright citizenship, going back to the 14th Amendment through a late 19th century decision called Wong Kim Ark, over 100 years of executive practice, federal legislation. Mm-hmm. We have come to accept birthright citizenship, and it's rather shocking that it's an issue in this case.
Yeah. Ana, what comes to mind?
Well, the population that I believe right now, you know, is more vulnerable mm-hmm. is the Venezuelan population, right? You know, the Venezuelan immigrant. And definitely this is something that, you know, when I think about the birthright citizenship is something that is being questioned right now, I think about that immigrant population because, you know, we don't have diplomatic relations between Venezuela and the United States. Mm-hmm. So when you have that situation, then you will have children who will be stateless. Yeah. And, you know, that's really is an issue.
That is a major one. Definitely concerning. Dulce, the thought that birthright citizenship is up for discussion right now.
Yeah, we just believe that this is a baseless attack on citizenship rights. And this is something that the administration has continued to do with different strategies to sow chaos and terrorize our immigrant community. We know that this is part of the Constitution. This is the law of the land. And that's what we are telling our community members.
Mm-hmm. And we're hearing this hour from the Supreme Court that the justices announced they would allow the Trump administration to end the end temporary protected status for nearly 350,000 Venezuelan immigrants for now. So this is pending appeal of the case, potentially allowing the administration to move ahead with deportations. Ana.
This is a sad moment, I'm telling you. Yeah, 350,000 people who came here, many of them, you know, in our case, you know, the Illinois-Venezuelan Alliance, we recommended to many of them, you know, just to apply for asylum. But we don't know really, you know, how many really got that additional protection.
Yeah.
Just sending them back when these people they have, sending them back to where? So that's in the first place. This is really where it is.
Yeah.
You know, the Venezuela has no change.
Well, the justices said they would preserve the ability of individual immigrants to bring some legal challenges if the government tries to cancel their work permits or remove them from the country. I mean, does that change your thoughts on anything here, Professor?
It's not clear exactly what that means. So there should be some measure of process before these individuals are deprived of things like work permits, because they were here with authorization under the TPS program. But we don't know exactly what kind of process that is going to mean or what it looks like. And as Anna said, some of these individuals should enjoy protection as claimants for asylum, but we don't know how many.
Yeah.
And given the administration's treatment of Venezuelans so far under the Alien Enemies Act, which is another case that's pending at the Supreme Court, mm-hmm. we really don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, there's so much up in the air. As I said, this information just into the newsroom within the past half hour. Back to our topic of birthright citizenship specifically, Professor, I just kind of want you to set the tone here. I mean, the Supreme Court has upheld this for children of immigrants since 1898. Can the president reinterpret the Constitution by executive order?
Well, the president cannot reinterpret the Constitution by executive order. What President Trump seems to be doing here is trying to change our definition of birthright citizenship that we've accepted in this country, again, for over 100 years, and doing that through executive order. Now, the way the case came to the Supreme Court actually doesn't touch on birthright citizenship quite yet. It touches on this idea of universal or nationwide injunctions. But underneath this all, Sasha, is the idea of birthright citizenship. And ultimately, the Supreme Court will have to wrestle with this question, whether President Trump's version of birthright citizenship is right, or whether our 100-plus year version of birthright citizenship is the right one.
And so why isn't the court ruling on it directly?
Well, that's mostly because the administration has not asked it to rule on it directly yet. The problem here is that we have three federal district courts who have issued universal or nationwide injunctions holding up the president's executive order across the entire country.
I see.
And so what the Trump administration has asked the Supreme Court to do is to limit those injunctions only to the parties before those courts. Mm. If the Supreme Court were to grant that relief, we'd have a kind of patchwork of birthright citizenship across the entire country until the Supreme Court ruled on the underlying question of birthright citizenship.
So essentially limiting the judge's powers. What are the consequences then of judges just not being able to issue universal injunctions?
Well, in this case, they're particularly dire because, again, we'd have a kind of patchwork of birthright citizenship across the United States where a child born in one state could be a citizen, but in another state not. A child traveling from a state where they're a citizen to a state where there's not birthright citizenship could potentially lose their citizenship, which is extraordinary in our country.
Yeah. So, Anna, you listened to the oral arguments back on Thursday. Talk to me some more about what was going through your mind.
Well, you know, when I was listening that, the oral argument were really highlighting the tension between the power of the executive branch to enforce their policies and the power of the judiciary branch to protect the rights, the constitutional rights, mm-hmm. right? So it seems like, you know, we are dealing with, you know, two different positions in which what the executive branch is really enforcing. This is really what is going to be from now on, which really is worries me because those impositions that are coming from the White House, you know, are not. It seems to be unconstitutional. You know, just imposing something that is already in the Constitution, which have decided, you know, for the 14th Amendment for many years ago, mm-hmm. that who is really an American citizen.
Dulce, what are you hearing from members just about Trump's executive order and just the fact that the Supreme Court is hearing this case?
Yeah, thank you, Sasha. I do want to bring it back a little bit about the recent news and just want to, again, reinstate that this is just another move by the Trump administration and also Department of Homeland Security just to destabilize our communities. ICER and member organizations like Mano Mano, we were there in the front lines when new arrivals started coming, many of them being Venezuelans who are really just looking for safety and opportunity in the state of Illinois. Mm-hmm. And so with that being said, we are committed to our communities, for them to know their rights, to ensure that they are educated. And so with that being said, to your next point, is that whenever our community members are asking about an executive order or about recent news, we ensure that we are providing that education, that information, so that they can be empowered, mm-hmm. so that they know what their rights are, right? At this point in time, we're still getting questions about the alien registration website. A lot of people have been asking about that, whether they should register or not.
And remind us why that was even a thing.
Well, the administration, again, in their willingness to terrorize immigrant communities, you know, their messaging is that you have to register. And if you don't register, you're going to face criminal penalties. You're also going to get like $1,000 fine every day, some sort of like, you know, monetary fine that it's super expensive. And so for us, you know, as community-based organizations, obviously we want to educate our community members, but
sure
also keep each other safe, right?
Yeah.
And obviously we have to educate them about what this is, but also we can't go out there and advise them not to register. We always want community members to check with their immigration attorney to see what is the best step forward, because everyone's case is just, you know, it's everyone has a different case. It's based on the individual. And so we want to make sure that they know the information. And so with Birthright just coming in, you know, they're still trying to catch up. It seems like it's like every day you're getting news, just like, you know, the news that we just got here like 10 minutes ago. And so they're still trying to catch up.
And the more we hear Birthright citizenship news in the media, especially, the more you're going to get phone calls.
Exactly. And our messaging will be, this is the law of the land. That if you are born in the United States, you are a U.S. citizen.
So, Professor, we were talking a moment ago about just some of the potential consequences there of judges not being able to issue, of the lifting of the national injunctions. Could it differ by state?
It could potentially differ by state. It's going to depend exactly on what the Supreme Court rules. If the Supreme Court rules in favor of the Trump administration and grants their request to limit the court's rulings to just the parties within their jurisdiction, then we really will have a patchwork, at least for a period of time, of citizenship in the United States. And we'll have different citizenship in different states.
So will Illinois' injunction on this executive order hold?
Even if the Trump administration prevails, Illinois' injunction will hold. Illinois is a named plaintiff in one of these cases. And so even if the Supreme Court gives the Trump administration exactly what they're asking for, Illinois' injunction will hold unless something extraordinary happens.
Okay. So given that, you know, information then, Anna, how are you thinking about the folks that you serve?
Well, one of the issues that I see is still, you know, with executive order is that the definition that they use is that they're limiting the birthright citizenship only to people who have at least one parent who is citizen or permanent resident. But the question is, what is going to happen with asylum seekers and TPS holders? Because they are not really mentioned. They're mentioned in such a way that they say those who are temporarily, they will not be guaranteed, you know, the citizenship. So, and if you think about right now, Sasha, we have 2.9 million asylum seekers pending. Okay, so, and then you know, we have 700,000 TPS because we have to count the TPS on March 2021, and now, you know, the TPS for the 2023. So so that really is very worrisome.
So is the worry there then that parents or who are TPS holders, their children won't be able to be protected?
Right. The children will not be able to be protected. The children from the asylum seekers, you know, many of them will not be able to be protected. So those are, as I said, you know, nowhere land.
So many layers here.
Exactly.
If this national injunction is lifted, Professor, I'm thinking about the parents, you know, that don't live here. Illinois will have these certain protections. Will folks have to travel to Illinois to have their children?
I suppose that could be one option. Sure. If you were in a state that did not have birthright citizenship,
right,
if the Supreme Court ruled for the Trump administration, maybe you make the decision to travel
Illinois becomes
Illinois.
A safe haven.
It becomes a safe haven. But then you better be sure you don't travel back to that old state, right? Because then you lose your citizenship when you cross that state line.
Dulce, back in February, the Department of Homeland Security announced a measure. Anyone who is in the U.S. without legal status, as you mentioned earlier, they've got to register with the federal government. We know that the judge upheld this back in April. I mean, what else is this bringing up for people? They're concerned about having to register. Is the fear that once they put all their information out there, that someone is going to come and scoop them up, send them back home?
Absolutely.
As we've been seeing with the, you know, this mass deportation since January?
Absolutely. The way that we are messaging this to our community members is that this is another immigration enforcement tool in their toolbox. And they have to be aware, obviously talking with an immigration attorney, that so for those example that have applied for DACA, they have applied for TPS or asylum, the Department of Homeland Security already has their information. But for someone that has never had an encounter with them and they're here and they don't have document status, then they, according to the law, would have to register or face criminal penalties. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was having this conversation with someone else and I said, you know, as the executive director, I would say, hey, go talk to an attorney. But me, as a daughter of an undocumented, you know, woman, my mother, obviously I'm not going to go tell her, hey, you need to go register this or, you know, you're going to face criminal penalties. And so that is such a difficult decision
for
community
firsthand.
Members to make.
Yeah, you know this firsthand. Here's the thing, too. You're also trying to balance, and I'm looking at both of you, Dulce and Anna, not stoking too much fear in the people who are depending on your information and your support. How do you juggle that?
I'm just thinking about, you know, what happened today.
Yeah, because you want them to be informed.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. And we've been doing that. You know, we've been informing about their rights. We've been informing people. And always our message is, do not lose your faith. You know, because, you know, this is a country, I do believe, you know, in the generosity of this country. I do believe, you know, that this is a country that when we decided to come here, it was because this was a country of immigrants. And definitely not everyone is a trendy Aragua. Okay, we've been criminalized. We've been a very vulnerable community because it seems like, you know, in the mind of many people in the administration, everybody that is here or everyone who came, you know, really is a delinquent, somebody who do not deserve, you know, doesn't deserve to be here, which is not true because it's, you know, the number is so small that that really, you know, just making justification in creating all these immigration tools, it seems to be very, in my point of view, it's insane. It's very criminal from that side, you know, just to think about that only I'm taking everyone out of this country because everyone do not deserve to be here in this country.
So the Supreme Court, Professor, they've blocked the president from resuming deportations using the Alien Enemies Act. What does that tell you?
That tells me that this is a Supreme Court that's willing to push back against the president on some level. But again, Sasha, just today, just before we came on air, we got this TPS decision, which tells me just the opposite. This is a Supreme Court who's going to let the president make their own decisions with regard to immigration enforcement.
Anyone else mind blown that's happening? I can't believe that we're at a point where someone can challenge the Constitution in this way.
So with the TPS decision, the TPS program is something where the courts have traditionally and will, we would expect, to be highly deferential to the president. With the Alien Enemies Act, but maybe not quite so much, given that it's only been used 3 times in our country's history and at times of war, right? With regard to birthright citizenship, we're just in new territory entirely with the president issuing an executive order that purports to roll back over 100 years of understanding.
Yeah. So then leave us with this. What is next in the birthright citizenship case? What are next steps here? Because I'm having serious whiplash trying to follow all the things.
You and me both. So next steps, we expect to get a ruling from the Supreme Court probably within the next month or so, maybe sooner. And the Supreme Court will either rule for the Trump administration, will rule for the plaintiffs and keep the nationwide injunctions in place, or do something else that might be surprising or extraordinary, but more likely one of the two of those. My guess is that they're probably going to look for a way to limit nationwide injunctions. Mm-hmm. under some sort of principle or limiting principle. It's not clear to me exactly what that might be. Maybe when the executive does something flatly unconstitutional or invades individual rights, that might be a limiting principle, or some other principle that the court comes up with.
Yeah.
But we may have a patchwork situation for a period of time.
Dulce, leave us with a message to immigrants right now. Folks listening.
Yeah, I want to bring it back to how do we think about the messaging with all these news coming from this administration? You know, we have to be very strategic. We work, you know, as Mano Mano, we work very closely with Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights. We work with the NIJC, National Immigrant Justice Center, so that we can have a clearly defined message, but also not solve, you know, fear and anxiety, right, that our community members are already carrying. And the message that I want to leave with is that, you know, we as member-based community organizations like ICERB, but also community organizations, we want to make sure our community members are well-educated about their rights and know that we're here to inform and we're here to keep each other safe.
Absolutely. Dulce Ortiz is board president of the Illinois Coalition of Immigrant and Refugee Rights and executive director of Mano a Mano Resource Center in Waukegan. Ana Gil Garcia is founder of Illinois Venezuelan Alliance, and Stephen Schwinn's a professor of law at UIC. Thank you all. This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic. It was edited by Dan Tucker and mixed by Ari Mejia. Our goal is to break down today's most pressing issues and invite you into the conversation. Make sure to subscribe wherever you listen or go to wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. I look forward to talking to you again very soon.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.